You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiatakis. And yeah, it's that time of year again. Here at the football field at Granada Hills Charter High School, 1,120 students in black robes and caps are walking across the stage to graduate this year. Just like always, right? But the 2021 ceremony is definitely different from years past. Those students playing pomp and circumstance are a smattering of members from the wind ensemble, the orchestra, the jazz band, whoever could read the music and was willing to blow into a wind instrument next to another classmate.
Jason Ma, with highest honors.
And plus, for many of these students, this is their first time back to campus in 15 months.
And Stolarov, with highest honors.
As COVID case numbers continue to drop and vaccination rates continue to climb, we're starting to see evidence of life returning to normal. And at this time of year, that means graduations. Today, on Greater LA, KCRW's Kaylee Wells takes us to a couple of high school campuses in LA County where students are getting to celebrate their achievement, even if it still looks a little different this year.
Zane Zaid, with highest honors.
Trinity Angel Mackey, with highest honors.
Tadavit Nursisian.
First, let's go back to 2020, when the graduates of Granada Hills Charter attended an entirely virtual ceremony, some of them in pajamas in their living rooms. That ceremony started with Governor Gavin Newsom's announcement from that March.
98.8% of our schools have closed down. Don't anticipate schools are going to open up in a week. Please don't anticipate in a few weeks.
Followed by the school's executive director, Brian Bauer.
This is my 20th graduation ceremony at Granada. And clearly this is a different one for the ages, right? For the record books.
He stands at a podium completely alone in the middle of the school football field.
I know this evening our stadium seats may seem empty, but really they are filled with the spirit of your years at Granada Hills Charter.
Fast forward now, back to that same football field last week. Bauer's opening address this year has a tinge of hope.
I doubt many of us had any idea that a full year later, we would continue to be dealing with the single most unprecedented health crisis in our lifetimes. This coronavirus pandemic is perhaps the greatest challenge that any of us will face in our lifetime.
This is the ceremony for people with last names M through Z. The A through L's went the day before because with more than 1,100 graduates, not everyone fits physically distanced.
Mia Newman, highest honors.
When a graduate's name is called, the accompanying cheers are quieter than years past.
Panaya Politis.
They each could only bring two adults who watch from the sparsely populated bleachers. But still, the back half of the alphabet is thrilled to be here in person.
Like, I just was walking over there, walking with you guys, and I saw my friend Cole Bennett, and I've known him since first grade. And I haven't spoken to him really in a long time or seen him. And then I was like, hey, how are you doing? Like,
Zoba Ndife says this is his first time on campus with his peers since the pandemic forced the school to send him home in March of last year.
It's just crazy seeing these people again. And, you know, it honestly sucks in some type of ways that, you know, we may not see each other again. And you may not see, you know, a lot of the people I've seen throughout the school year again. But, you know, it's still a good feeling. I feel good.
Associated Student Body Vice President Dayanara Salinas says the in-person graduation was so important to students that they decided to cancel prom. Because if they had a COVID outbreak at prom, that would mean another year of watching graduation on Zoom. Instead of prom, she and her friends got dressed up and danced in the backyard of a friend's house last month. Salinas says it was well worth the trade-off.
It kind of feels surreal in a sense, but also like, are we really doing this? Like, I don't know, it still feels like I'm a junior in high school, but it was really nice seeing all my friends. And although I'm only able to graduate with half of the senior class, it's really nice just being able to like all meet in person one more time before we move on with the rest of our lives.
Graduating in person was so important to some 2020 seniors, they voted overwhelmingly to postpone their graduation until they could do it together. That's what the class of 2020 at Downey High School did. Here's Principal Tom Hout speaking at a ceremony 2 weeks ago for the class of 2020 in May of 2021.
And now, for the first time in the school's history, I'd like to introduce 505 graduates from the class of 2020 that have decided to return to their alma mater to participate not only in their graduation, but their first one-year reunion. Let's have some fun.
Well said.
1 year later, most of those students wanted to participate, but there was only room for half of them physically distanced on the campus football field. One of the graduates on the field was Jacqueline Leone.
It's weird, but it's not that weird because I didn't know my last day was going to be my last day. So it feels like our first high school reunion.
Literally a year ago today, we didn't think we would ever have this. So to hear the news that we were going to have a real graduation is pretty surreal and very cool to me.
Janelle Durazzo has spent the past year studying to become a nurse and working as a Starbucks barista. She says coming back a year later gives her family closure.
I decided to come back only because I feel like it's like a part of growing up, becoming an adult, going to college. High school graduation is something that is very like sentimental, especially to me, to my family. Like, I don't know about like most of the students, but like Mexican culture, like graduating is something like very, very huge. And so like I feel like it's important for me to be here.
There's something like closure here for Principal Houts as well. He recalls that day last year when the pandemic shut everything down as a tough one.
I remember this day vividly. There was a storm coming in, figuratively and literally. When I got a call, the call informed me that a couple knuckleheads, Pedro and John John, had stolen the school's security cart and went for a joyride. And I got a bill a couple months ago for the cart that doesn't go straight anymore, Pedro. So I called Pedro and said, you can either pay for the cart or you can play a song at graduation. He chose B. So let's see if it's worth a cart. Pedro, let's, no pressure.
So yeah, the ceremony featured musical entertainment by security cart joyrider Pedro de Anda. Houts says after hosting two graduations for the class of 2021, the energy at the ceremony for the 2020 graduates was through the roof. He might also be biased. His daughter was one of the graduates who walked across the stage that night.
This class literally, Friday, March 13th, we closed that day, and it was just a shock. Your best time in high school is your second semester of your senior year, and that was basically ripped from these kids. So that's why I'm just so happy to see them back, and they're so excited to be here.
For a lot of us, the graduation season represents more than a high school diploma. It's an ending to a long year and a celebration that so much of the life we lost in 2020 is finally restored in 2021. For KCRW, I'm Kaylee Wells.
Thank you, class of 20!
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It was yet another social media video that went viral. Texas beekeeper Erica Thompson posted this video of her removing a swarm of bees from an umbrella, moving them into a box, but doing that with only her bare hands, no protective gear whatsoever.
When bees are in swarms like this, it means they're looking for a new place to live. They tend to be very docile since they don't have any resources to defend. This colony would not survive without a queen, but luckily I had an extra one on me I could give them. I put the bees in my apiary so they could continue the important work they do in a place that's safer for them and for people, and it was another great day of saving the bees.
Well, that got a lot of people in the beekeeping world, even here in Los Angeles, buzzing last week. They claim that Thompson was irresponsible in touting the ease of bee removal when, in fact, bees can sting you and aren't that safe to approach or to be around without protective gear and equipment. It is dangerous for you. It's also dangerous for the bees. So what is it actually like to be an urban beekeeper? What gear do you need to get started? Was there a pandemic boom of beekeeping? Kind of like, you know, everybody making bread? And can you really pick up a swarm of bees with your bare hands? Here to pollinate us with information, I'm so sorry for that, in the bee community is Tyson Kaiser, an urban beekeeper, owner of Sweet Bee Removal. Hey, Tyson.
Hello.
I want to start with that video from Erica Thompson, the so-called bee influencer. She's literally in this video scooping up the bees, hands full of bees. She says they're docile. Why is that an important note for her to make here?
Well, I mean, first of all, you have to understand that swarms are not like hives of bees, because hives, bees actually have things to protect. But when they're in a swarm mode, they're kind of in a just kind of keep it together and stay safe kind of mode. So they're not really interested in stinging too much. But I've attempted to do open hand swarm capture and with mixed results, mostly because bees aren't like monolithic. Some can be nice, some can be grumpy.
Especially if there's a queen nearby, right?
Well, no, they're not actually protecting the queen when they're in a swarm mode. Their whole idea is just to stick with her and stay together. So when they're swarming, they're generally more docile, and it is possible to gather them by hand. I mean, she wasn't doing something that you can't do. It's just not recommended and highly questionable, given that a lot of people are impressionable, and they might think that you can just go out and stick your hand into any bees, and that would be a real problem.
When it comes to LA, are there different types of bees as opposed to the ones that Thompson was dealing with in Texas?
Well, actually, she's got pretty similar class of bees to what we have. But like, again, they're not monolithic. But all the bees in Southern California have been Africanized since 1994. So what we have basically are what I would call just grumpy feral bees. They're not exactly what you would want for a commercial operation and almost pretty much not what you'd want for a backyard operation. They're not terribly desirable by beekeepers overall, but that doesn't mean that they're not worth anything. I actually really like handling them, and I deal with the grumpiness I basically approach any beehive like it's the worst hive I've ever met, and then until they show me different, that's how we work.
Well, I mean, we can all get grumpy sometimes, right?
Absolutely.
especially when I haven't had my coffee in the morning. But I what happens with a grumpy bee? I mean, what does that mean?
Well, it just means that they have a higher defensive capability. They're not aggressive. A lot of people use the word aggressive to describe bees, and that's just not the case. I mean, the only thing that bees want to do is protect their hive. They're not interested in hurting anybody. Just because they can sting doesn't mean they need to or want to. It'll actually kill them to sting you. So the whole point is that we try to minimize that interaction where people are going to get harmed by bees by, you know, I remove them from people's backyards, their garages, their houses, and then put them out into acreage that I have and just raise them out there instead, just away from people.
Is it legal here in LA to have a hive? Where can you have one?
Yes, it is. I was actually somewhat part of the legalization effort here in LA, and it basically allows you one hive per 2,500 square feet of yard space. I mean, that means if your lot is 5,000 square feet, that means you can have two hives. And there's a bunch of other regulations that go with that. Of course, registering with the county, having all the gear that you need, keeping it away from the neighbor's fence line, all that kind of stuff. But yes, it is totally legal.
What do you need to start a hive? How do you get started on something like that?
Well, normally I wouldn't go out and buy gear first. There are organizations that offer lessons. And also there's mentors that people that will offer teaching to help get people started. And then from there, you'd basically buy your gear. And that means the wooden ware, the frames and all that stuff, assemble everything, get it painted, and also have a bee suit or a bee jacket and gloves and a brush and a hive tool and a smoker. And those are basically the bare essentials of getting bees. But that's actually like a $400 to $500 outlay for a lot of people. So, you know, people naturally want to cut corners. They want to get free bees, things like that. And I totally get it. But, you know, they want to make sure that people are up to speed before they even bother to get a hive. They should probably just try to figure out if this is something that's really for them or not and go take a lesson.
Before you leave us, you know, it's been really dry. Another dry year in California. I mean, does that affect how the bees operate? I mean, is it dangerous for them?
Yeah, absolutely. And what it's when they have very little stores to put in, we call it stores like honey and pollen and things like that, those all require adequate blooming. And when you have a bunch of bees and they're all looking for a reduced number of blooms due to less water, there's going to be competition. There's going to be less resources to go around. Bees will go hungry. Bees will start robbing other hives to get stuff from weak hives. They'll try to rob it out and take honey home for themselves. And they also tend to get pretty bored, especially during the middle summer months, with what we call the dearth. And the dearth means that there's nothing out there. There's no flowers. There's nothing for bees to do. But the drought itself is really the terrible thing for us because we're going into multi-year drought, and this is the driest one we've seen in I don't know how long. So before too long, up at my yard, I'll have to be feeding them. Like I'll actually be making them sugar syrup and feeding them to keep them alive because they're one. And in that case, there's no honey to give to anybody. So you can take what they're able to give, but you don't take what they can't afford. So you don't want to kill the bees by taking all their honey.
You remember when so many folks were talking about, you know, the bees were going extinct? Cell phones were killing the bees, you know, like they were just going away and we have to have the bees. And as the bee, you know, as what happens to the bees happens to humanity, things like that. Are we seeing that still? Do you think bees are making a comeback?
On my website, I have a blog post that talks extensively about the idea that the bees were disappearing, which the numbers have been pretty stable for many years as far as like the amount of commercial hives in operation in the U.S. But they are being impacted, but I think it was by different reasons, not cell phones. It was more like pesticides and, you know, stress and being moved around all over the place. So in general, no, I don't think the bees are going extinct, and I think people can relax on that. There's hundreds of thousands of hives all over LA, and it's basically bee paradise. So, you know, any major urban city like this in you know, southern states is going to have bees, and they're going to be doing well. Outside of that, not so much. I mean, you know, we don't have honeybees just out roaming the countryside. They just don't do it. It's too dry out there.
Tyson Kaiser, owner of Sweet Bee Removal, which focuses on humane and ethical bee removal in Los Angeles. Tyson, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Oh, no, thank you. I appreciate it. Take care.
It's Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. In the modern world of technology, and we're talking screens and video games, streaming, the written word, particularly poetry, seems like a quaint throwback to a simpler time. Nevertheless, every couple of years here in LA, like other cities, well, the city appoints a new poet laureate, a program that they say aims to enhance the city's appreciation of the literary arts and to reach people who have limited exposure to creative writing. Lynn Thompson is LA's newest poet laureate. She took the post earlier this year, and she's with us now to talk about her words and her works. Hey, Lynn.
Hello. So glad to join you.
Congratulations to you, by the way.
Thank you very much. I'm very excited.
You know, when I think about how many people have so many technological pieces, you know, the screens, as I said, and people read online, but we're living in a time of fancy graphics and eye-popping videos. I mean, where does poetry fit in?
I think poetry is more needed now than ever because of all that technology. Whether you read it on your phone or in a book or in a journal, it really slows you down if you're paying close attention and lets you enter into a world you might not otherwise enter.
You're from LA. You grew up here, right?
Born and raised.
What part of town?
In the View Park area was where I was in high school, I'll say junior high school and high school. But really, I've lived all over the city.
And how did living all over the city, how did that affect not only your worldview, but the words that you put on paper, that you put on those screens?
Well, the wonderful thing about LA, which many complain about, including myself when I have to drive it, is how far neighborhood A is from neighborhood M.
Yeah.
But the truth is those neighborhoods are so unique in their configuration and how they fit into the city as a whole, that I think that that has really affected how I might approach a particular topic, whether I'm in northeastern part of the city or the southwestern part of the city, in the ocean or near the mountains. That all comes into play almost always in my poems.
You know, I think it's so important because when we talk about how technology sort of is just everywhere right now, how do you engage with younger people who are really connected to this digital world? I mean, how do you get them motivated to write things down or to type it on their screens about their neighborhoods, about their city experiences?
Well, you're tapping into something that I hope to develop into a project during my term as poet laureate. And that is for them, particularly in a post-pandemic time, to think about the city, what makes it unique to them, what are icons to them, what aren't icons. Maybe an icon to me would be the Hollywood Bowl, but to a 15-year-old, that's not the icon, something else is. So I really want to start to get them engaged in thinking about what makes their city, what they like about it, what they don't like about it, what they want to preserve, and what they've been sorry to see go.
You started a podcast too, didn't you? Just like a lot of people, you're now have your own podcast.
I never would have thought it in a million years, but it is such an easy way to bring poetry to the city. And it's posted on the library website, and then I take that link and post it on social media. So it's really gotten out into the world, and it's a way to introduce the listeners to poets that they might not otherwise come across. So it's been great fun. I love doing it.
It's called Poems on Air, by the way, if you want to check it out. And again, through the public library site. The city provides you some money. It's not a lot of money, admittedly. I mean, $10,000, right?
It does.
To produce this type of, I mean, that doesn't go very far, I would imagine.
It doesn't go very far, but nobody becomes the poet laureate, I don't think, to make money. You become the poet laureate because it gives you a platform to share the thing that you love the most with as many people as possible.
I'm sure there are folks who are listening right now who say, you know, I don't know how to do this. Maybe I used to write some poetry or I used to put it, you know, words into a journal years ago, but I don't do that anymore. What advice would you give to someone who wants to play with their creative writing again and doesn't know how to pick it back up?
I would tell them that all those scribblings in their journals are probably kernels of poems. And I think we all have that kernel inside of us, but somewhere along the way, we're made fearful of it. And that shouldn't be the case.
Before you leave us, would you mind reading one of your poems? It's a shorter one to help end our show today. This is Los Volcanes de Brea, right?
Correct. And I wrote this poem. I do love writing about the city. As I said, it falls into a lot of my work. And this one was particularly important to me to write because we have this fabulous La Brea Tar Pits right in the middle of the city next to LACMA, the museum, and a lot of people don't know much of the history of it. So I did a little research, which I love to do when I'm writing something like this, and this was the poem that came from that research. Los Volcanes de Brea. Microfossils, primordial woods, insects, mollusks, seeds, and pollen grains. Covering the asphaltum, dust, leaves, waters, old bones that darken the pit. Rancho La Brea, once a salt mine, now Hancock Park, is mired with the remains of tens of thousands of years. Found during one expedition, 1769, led by Señor Portola, dire wolves, saber-toothed cats, pill bugs trapped in tar geysers issuing from land-like springs, magpies, garter snakes, mammoths, scimitar cats, well-kept, trace of the La Brea woman who probably suffered a violent death at 18 or 20, ritually interred with dog. Also found, falcons, ragweed, one Andalusian.
I want to thank you, Lynn Thompson, LA's new poet laureate for 2021. Thank you for sharing your thoughts and your poetry with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that's it for this evening. Tomorrow, Dinner Theater is biting back from COVID, but very slowly. Check us out online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Get the podcast delivered fresh many times a week. And by the way, you can tell us how you're doing too. kcrw.com/greaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, PJ Shahamet, Michael Stark, Desmond Taylor, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Mike Vogel, and Christian Bordahl were essential for our show. Thank you for your time. Of course you're essential. We're honored that you gave us some of your time tonight. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great night.